I'm Ben Elliott, and with me is my wife, Taryn Elliott, and this is Walking Between Shadows. On this episode of Walking Between Shadows, I want everyone to exercise caution, as the topics that we discuss are graphic in nature. A single mother in a rural West Tennessee town finds herself with three kids out on her own, and her daughter is diagnosed with ODD, or oppositional defiant disorder. She struggles her entire life for her entire time trying to raise this child that just defies everything that she does. Suddenly, she finds herself in the crosshairs of this very child, and in the very same room that she finds another of her children dead, this child attempts to kill her.
Yeah, so I have known Amy Hawks, the lady we're talking about in this story, for my entire adult life.
So you've pretty well known her and these kids, her family.
Right. I've known her brother and his kids. And so, yes, I've known this family. I know her cousins. Mm-hmm. She's a good friend to me. And she grew up in Humboldt, Tennessee, which is basically the same place we grew up.
Yeah, it's within the same community. Right. Sure.
So, right, she's the mother of three kids, Drew, who was 10 years older than Andrea and 12 years older than Jarrett. So there was 2 years in between Jarrett and Andrea, and there was, you know, at this time, Drew's quite a bit older.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a big age difference.
So Drew was the oldest of the three.
Right.
And then Andrea was the middle of the three, mm-hmm. and Jarrett was the youngest.
Right. And okay. There's only 2 years between those two.
Andrea, gotcha.
And little Jarrett. I've definitely seen Amy go through a lot of hard times and bad relationships and struggling to make ends meet with three little kids.
Yeah. I mean, you've personally witnessed her relationships and what she's put up with there, but you've also heard, you know, and witnessed her talk about the struggles with Andrea.
That's right.
And this is the child that was diagnosed with ODD, so.
Right. We'll get into that a little bit more, too.
Yeah.
Drew was the oldest, and he was the independent older brother, you know, that was kind of already gone when these kids were small, when Jarrett and Andrew were small. And Jarrett's a mama's boy. And being the youngest of Amy's kids, she always felt like she needed to protect him the most, especially from her only daughter, Andrea. Andrea is the middle child set between her two brothers. Amy recalls Andrea as a defiant child. Even as a toddler, she resented any kind of authority. Andrea would often bully Jarrett to the extreme that if she was ever alone with him for a few minutes, she would abuse him.
She bullied him.
She bullied Jarrett, the baby.
Yeah, she bullied him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Andrea, she's a bully.
At the age of 12, Andrea was diagnosed with oppositional defiant disorder, or ODD, and bipolar disorder. And ODD is a disorder in a child that is marked by defiant and disobedient behavior to authority figures. This cause is unknown, but likely involves a combination of genetics and environmental factors.
Constantly getting into trouble. She would tell anybody with authority, whether it be me, police, a judge, the teachers, it didn't matter. If they could tell her what to do, she would defy them at all costs. She's even told them where to go and how to get there, and you know, she cuts them out without thinking twice about it.
Once, when Andrea was a preteen, she punched Amy in the face, breaking out her two front teeth. Amy had no other choice but to call the police. Later in court, Andrea basically told the juvenile judge to go F himself. Amy recalls having to place Andrea in foster care due to her violent behavior.
Yeah, she started getting in trouble. Well, I had her arrested when she was 12 for doubling up her fist and popping me in the mouth, knocking a couple teeth out.
Oh, my God.
So I took her down to the juvenile secretary, mm-hmm. and told her what had happened, and she got smart with her, and the secretary stood up and slammed her hands down on the table, and she says, "Little girl, I'm not your mama. You're not talking to me that way." She didn't care. Andrea didn't care.
Yeah.
And I think the more I tried to scare her straight like that, it made it worse.
Amy stated that she always felt like she needed to protect Jarrett. Andrea continued to stay in trouble and in state custody until she was 18 years old.
Folks would be involved.
Mm-hmm.
Then the state would get involved. She's in and out of state custody. She's been in foster homes before because I'd have to, they'd make me jump through all the hoops, you know.
Right.
You know how that goes.
Yep.
So while I'm busy jumping through hoops, she's in a foster home stealing from that foster mother using a credit card. So it was like when we went to court the first time about her, they were like looking at me like, what's your problem? This is all your fault. And I was like, okay.
Right.
I did. I swear I told Judge Newell, I said, if y'all can do any better, please have at it. Help me.
Right.
And about 6 months later, I had her DCS worker call me apologizing because they saw that side of Andrea that I tried to tell them about.
Yeah, they didn't believe until.
Right. They got a taste of it.
Right.
You know, they finally got tired of her, but she ended up aging out in custody.
Man.
Because she couldn't stay out of trouble. She
yeah.
She went back home and then get in trouble again. And I was scared. I was going to lose Jared.
Yeah, with her, if she was bullying him, I mean, you don't know what she's doing to him.
Yeah, I couldn't leave them alone for 5 minutes without her blacking his eye, busting his lip. I played referee for years. I took a bunch of punches for him.
Mm. On July 7th, 2019, 18-year-old Jared, Amy's baby, the mama's boy, the animal lover, the artist, committed suicide. And if that's not traumatic enough, Amy was the one that discovered Jared's lifeless body in their home on that July morning. Andrea was in jail on some misdemeanor drug charges at the time of Jared's death, but was given a pass to attend her brother's memorial service. About a month after Jared's death, Andrea was released from jail with more anger and unhealed wounds than before she went in. And she began blaming Amy for Jared's death.
Why wasn't I doing meds so I could stay up and watch him 24/7?
Amy picked up the pieces the best she could after losing Jared. She started her own tie-dye t-shirt business with the cutest stuff ever, and it really is. And I hope she does it again.
So she's not doing that right now?
Not right now, but she's been discussing doing it. So yeah. I hope she does, because I'm going to get some stuff. And Amy continued to try to heal her and Andrea's relationship, but it was still very strained. In November of 2021, Andrea and her boyfriend moved in with her aunt and uncle a few doors down from Amy's home. Andrea and her boyfriend fought daily, physically and verbally. Amy recalls Andrea using hard drugs at this time, such as heroin and meth. The relationship between mother and daughter was very strained, to say the least, but Amy could not give up on her only daughter. And I imagine she felt that way. I mean, that would be really hard.
Yeah, I mean, we've done a lot of cases and researched a lot of stuff where parents of these accused are still, you know, very attached to them, you know, and they want to support them. They know they've done wrong, and that doesn't make them evil. It's that whole parent relationship that they have.
And Amy and I talked about this a little bit, and it's hard to separate the horrible things and behaviors of your child from that same baby that you held and you had so much hope for.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very hard to separate those two, and I understand that.
My only little girl, I wanted to...
You wanted to hold on to her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's all I had left.
On November 18th, 2021, Amy's world would change forever, and Andrea would unleash an unthinkable rage on her mother in the same room that Jared took his life 2 years earlier.
The 17th, we'll back up a day.
Mm-hmm.
I had just given her and her little boyfriend a bedroom suit. The dresser and chest of drawers helped him get it down to his house. Nightstands. And the next morning, she comes over. The morning of the 18th, she comes over toting one of the nightstands. Like, okay, they done got into it or something. Why is she bringing this back over here? But that's what had happened, is they had just got into a fist fight down there. She come up here, had a black eye. Oh, the not real bad, but you could tell they just got into it.
Yeah.
Because she had caught him doing the last of whatever they were doing.
Right.
And she got mad because he did it all.
Mm-hmm.
That was the story.
Mm-hmm.
And a friend of mine in Medina that I helped, my ex-husband, needed me to go to Jackson to pick up some medication for him. See, this is where I lose memory. From right. When she comes over about 8:30 or 9 o'clock that morning, because I remember it was early, till about 3 o'clock in the afternoon when we go to Jackson to get his medicine. And in between that, I've lost memory of that day. We pull up in his driveway in Medina, and I'm fixing to get out and take his medicine here, but as soon as I put it in park, she sucker punches me in my nose.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, she was always bad about that. But the thing is, we weren't arguing. I mean, there was some tension, but it wasn't anything that I was alarmed over.
Right.
Because I would have known it after all these years. Mm-hmm. But anyway, until she sucker punches me in the driveway. And she leaned over and put her elbows on her knees in the seat and said to herself, "I'm going to kill you." And I said, "What did you say?" "I heard it. I just wanted to make sure. Say it again." Well, she didn't. So I get out, take him his medicine, go to his bathroom because I think it feels like my nose is bleeding, but it wasn't. Anyway, get back in the car. We drive home, which is about 30 minutes. Takes about 30 minutes to get to my house. Not a word was said all the way home. That's looking back. I think she's premeditating right now. Pull up the driveway, come in. I didn't even have time to take my coat off. I set my purse and my keys down. And the next thing I know, I got hands around my throat.
Oh, my God.
Bullying me backwards onto my bed. And she's saying, "Die, bitch, die."
Oh, my God.
Oh, she put pillows over my face just as fast as she can go. I fight it for, you know, everything happened so fast that right then I remember being scared and fighting it. And in a split second, I thought, this is my chance to go be with Jerry. I just laid my arms to the side and just, I didn't fight her. I quit fighting. I was just going to let her snuff me out.
Oh, my goodness.
Because I was ready to go be with Jared.
Yeah.
And then I heard his voice. No lie. Yeah. I heard his voice saying, "Not yet, Mom."
Wow.
And it come from the left side of my, I could hear it, my left ear. And I turned my head real quick, and there was a gap in the pillows where I could breathe.
Oh, my gosh.
And then that's when I heard that. Caught me a breath. And I started fighting back then. I started kicking her off of me, trying. I was able to get my knees up enough so I could push her back. And I reached up with my left hand to try to... if I was going to die, end up dying, they were going to have some DNA because I reached up to scratch her face.
Yeah.
I was going for her eyes. My index finger went in the side of her mouth and she bit down on it and broke my finger, but that's when I passed out.
Oh, my God.
I remember my finger going in her mouth and that's it. I'm out.
Yeah.
And then I wake up. I come to. And I try to get out the door. So it is, I come to, I try to get out the door, and she grabs me by the hood of my coat that I still have on. And what I do is I lean over and I let her pull it off of me over my head. And next thing I know, I'm out again because I'm coming to on my knees with my left elbow's on a coffee table, my right elbow's on my bed, holding me up, and I'm getting hit in the back of my head with a padlock.
Oh, my God.
I remember two hits, maybe three. But I think I'd already gotten hit and come to. And she leaned down and put her face up next to mine and said, "I done busted your head open." Talking to me, taunting me, saying, "There's blood in your eyes now, ain't it, bitch?" And she hit me again. And she started hollering, "Where's your phone?" And every time I said I didn't know, she hit me again. And then finally, I remember two hits to the back of my head with that padlock. I told her each time, I love you, Andrea.
Oh, God.
She hit me again. I said, I still love you. Because again, if I died, she was going to remember that.
Yeah.
I was giving her something to live with.
Yeah.
And then the next thing I remember, I'm waking up, laying in the floor, trying to, I crawled over to my door and was going to try to get out, but I was locked in.
Mm-hmm.
She had locked me in. But I heard her trying to get back in. So I went across my living room, over my bed, and out my back window, head first. At this point, I didn't know that my face and my eye was slashed wide open.
So you were unconscious when she...
Yes, I was laying on the floor unconscious. To me, I believe, looking back, she thought I was dead. And this is just the cherry on top.
Yeah.
For good measure, whatever she was thinking. To me, mutilating a dead body.
Yeah. My God. So from after she started cutting your face and mutilating your face, what happened from there? Did she switch off or?
You know, I don't know. I haven't seen her since because when she locked me in, that's the last I saw her face was when she came at me with hands around my throat and me getting her off of me.
Yeah.
Other than that, she was behind me, hitting me in the back of the head, knocking me out, cutting my face while I'm unconscious, and she's gone, locked the door.
Mm-hmm.
The next time I actually, eyes on her face is in court.
Amy's able to escape through her back window and start crawling to safety. Thankfully, Amy's cousin James lived behind her and heard the commotion and came and stood over Amy until help arrived.
I crawled on my elbows. I'm not sure why. My legs didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to stay. I knew she was still out there, and it was really dark.
Yeah.
And I wanted to stay as low to the ground as I could anyway, and I don't really think I could walk if I tried.
Right.
So I crawled on my elbows. He was outside. He had his dog seen on the monitor that they have. He has cameras.
Mm-hmm.
That there was a commotion over here, and he was barking.
Yeah.
Just raising hell got my cousin's attention, and he had come out and was hollering at Andrea that he wanted to talk to me, get your mama. I could hear him hollering at me when I woke up the last time trying to get out the door. I could hear him.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew he was out there. I crawled to him. Don't know what made him think to bring his phone. It's just like everything happened for a reason that night yet.
Absolutely.
He come out with the flashlight and his phone. Well, he called 911 and stood over my body until they got here. Wow. And she did try to come back. I'm waiting to hear the 911 call because mm-hmm. I do know that they have her on there saying, let's finish this yet. That's what she said.
Mm-hmm.
I remember hearing that because when I was on the ground out there, him standing over me.
Mm-hmm.
I was going in and out of consciousness.
Sure, yeah.
So every now and then I'd come to for a few seconds and I'd hear something and I'd pass back out. But I do remember she come back because I was thinking to myself, crawl under his truck because I was at the back of his truck.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to get as close up under the bumper as I could to hide from her.
Right. Oh, my goodness, Amy.
But they didn't know the back of my head was split open like a watermelon, and I didn't know my face was split open, so I'm laying on my back. They rolled me over.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, I'm laying on my stomach. That's what it is. I'm laying on my stomach because I know my head is bashed open.
Yes.
But they rolled me over, and they see my face, and I remember the look on the deputy's face when he rolled me over. I'll never forget that look.
Mm. Yes, terrified.
First thing he said was, we need air flight.
First responders were even shocked to see the damage done to Amy's face and head as Amy was being airlifted to a hospital in Memphis, Tennessee. Barely hanging on to life, Andrew was taken into custody in Gibson County, Tennessee. Over the next few days, Amy regained consciousness to the horrific reality her daughter inflicted upon her.
But she broke all the orbital socket, all the bones in my right eye. And I'm blind in my right eye right now. It detached my retina. I'm fixing to have a cornea transplant. I've got two scars from forehead to throat on each side of my face. Just right down the middle of my eyes, actually. But they're looking better.
Yeah.
And the back of my head, it's healed up very nicely.
Yeah.
But I think I sent you a picture of the back of my head that was in the hospital.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's before she took the staples out.
My goodness. And emotionally, I mean, like, how have you handled this with everything else that you've had to go through, Amy?
Tell you what, I've laid here and looked at rafters a few times.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, I don't have that in me.
Right.
I don't have that final say-so. I don't have that. I just don't have it. But don't think I don't think it.
Right.
I get depressed.
Sure.
Don't want to get up in the mornings and I would say feel half of my face, but half my face is so the nerves are damaged so bad I can't feel it, but it's hard to describe.
Mm-hmm.
So it's every minute of every day a pain to deal with what I'm left with.
What about, have you gotten any kind of therapy for this?
I did some EMDR at first.
Now, I've done that before, too. How did you feel about that? Because I liked it. I didn't go through what you went through either, so.
Well, it helped me with my nightmares.
Yeah.
In the beginning, I was having nightmares because I had to have a trach.
Yeah.
So when I got out, I had a bandage on my neck for a few weeks, and I would wake up in the beginning, in the middle of the night, clawing at the bandage with a hole in my neck.
Oh, my goodness.
Because I feel her hands around my throat again.
Yeah.
And the EMDR, that helped me with my nightmares.
Yeah.
Other than that, everything else is still there.
Right. In February of 2023, Andrea pled guilty to attempted first-degree murder and kidnapping.
Offered 15 years.
Yeah.
And she put an offer on the table first. When I went and talked to the DA, she had told me, she said, Andrea said she would plead guilty for 10 years. And I said, I bet the hell she would.
I bet.
No, ma'am.
Yeah.
I mean, even if I had agreed with 10 years, she wasn't getting what she wanted again.
Exactly, yeah. It was her demanding and saying if she could get what she wanted out of it.
Exactly. That's why I said no.
Mm-hmm. I don't blame you. Did you have to give like a victim's impact speech and all that stuff?
No,
you didn't have to.
No, it was settled out of court. And I'm sure if I wanted to, they would have had me there the day they settled out of court.
Right. So ultimately, she was sentenced to 15 years.
Yes, she's got to do 100%. She's in a prison in Nashville. It's a rehabilitation prison for women. So she'll get to go back to school. Main thing is she's got medical help there that she needs because the mama in me wants her to get help.
Of course.
To be a better person.
Of course.
And the victim in me said do every minute of 15 years and then let me know so I can move.
Right. I mean, and that's another thing. I mean,
she'll come back for me.
Yeah. So no remorse was shown by Andrea?
No. Just the fact that she got caught and is paying for this crime.
Wow.
That's why she feels bad. She wished it hadn't happened, she said, because of where she's at, not because of what she did.
Even after all this trauma, Amy still worries about Andrea's well-being. I guess that's Andrea's mother talking, not just her victim.
Now, I'm worried about her mouth is going to get her hurt or worse.
Yeah. Yeah.
She thinks she's badass. That's her mentality.
Mm.
She hadn't run across the one that's better than her yet.
And there always is.
Mm-hmm.
There always is.
Yeah. I'm afraid somebody's going to find out why she's there. A mother lover is going to find out why she's there and do something to her because of what she did. But, you know, this is part of me right now. I hope that she keeps that abuse story going. That way they'll feel sorry for her and won't beat her up, won't hurt her, you know. I go through so many emotions every day over this.
It's conflicting, I'm sure, all the time. All the time. You know, because the mother, I understand. I mean, it would be, if she had done this to someone else, you know, would you have, could you lose the love for her? And that's hard to ask a mother.
Yeah.
You know, we're conditioned to love unconditionally to our children. Today, Amy lives a quiet life on the road of healing with her service dog, Abby, a German Shepherd. Amy's childhood friend, Valerie, bred just for Amy. She is grateful to be alive and thanks a great deal to her angel, Jared. It was his voice she heard in her ear the night his sister almost took his mother's life. It was his presence that put the fight back into Amy that November night in West Tennessee. It's quite an amazing story of survival. I really appreciate Amy letting us do this. This has been Walking Between Shadows. Thank you for watching, and please remember to like and subscribe.
Join us again soon for the next episode.